Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Collegiately speaking.
And we're underway.
Gives the Moten. Plows ahead. Touchdown. John Moten. Here's a deep throw for Jefferson. Over the shoulder catch. Touchdown. What a catch. He fumbles the football. And it's picked up by the Wildcats. With a convoy. Right side of the 40.
Intercepted by the Wildcats. The Wildcats win. The Wildcats. Unbelievable.
It's Collegiately Speaking. Join Dave Enn and former Northwestern quarterback Dan Persa as they break down all the ins and outs of Northwestern football.
Touchdown! It's all over. The Wildcats with a comeback to remember.
Here's Dave and Dan.
And welcome to another edition of Collegiately Speaking from WGNRadio.com. I'm Dave Enn, joined by former Northwestern quarterback Dan Persa. Every week we dissect the Wildcats, talk about their last game, to look ahead to their next one. And this week, I don't know if we should spend much time talking about the last one, because it was a rough one against the Ohio State Buckeyes. A little bit later on, we're going to visit with former Wildcat safety and NFL safety Brian Peters. But Dan, we're obviously both out there Friday night. The Buckeyes came in. I think there was a feeling that Northwestern's defense could give them a chance in the game if the offense could pick it up a little bit. But ultimately, I think the defense did give them a chance for a while in the game. But Ohio State looks like they're just playing at a different level right now, and it's not the same level as the Wildcats.
No, they're even from last year, the Big Ten Championship and Rose Bowl Championship team, they're much better specifically on defense. And I think, you know, just talking to a couple guys before the game, you know, you always think that Northwestern, it's either going to be against teams like this really close, it's going to come down the wire, or it's going to be a complete blowout. It wasn't anything in between, and obviously we saw the latter. But, you know, Ohio State, they're just very talented. The quarterback is playing, you know, very efficiently, and the defense is playing great, and obviously we couldn't get a ton going on offense. And like you mentioned, the defense kind of kept us in the game early, but it's hard once you get going against a team like that, and you know you can't make any mistakes because the offense isn't going to put up a lot of points. It's hard to play like that.
And you can't afford to make any mistakes on special teams. And I think the special teams have been pretty good for this team. And you get a low snap on a punt, which sets them up at the 15-yard line. There was a punt that they dropped inside the five, in fact, inside the 1 yard line, and those things against a team like Ohio State will kill you. And even the way that punt ended up setting up a 55-yard field goal on the final play of the half, which right. And now at that point it was 28-3, but still it's a 4-score game, but you have another half of football. But I'll tell you one thing I did like seeing, and that was the running of Isaiah Bowser and coming back from injury. Basically, had missed pretty much a game and a half plus the bye week to recover, and he looked strong.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's the offensive line's playing pretty well. They're playing better than I think they've played in a long time. But they're just not getting a ton of help from the receivers or the quarterbacks, and that's such a big part of our offense. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit with Peters later about that. It's just like when you don't have that and your offense becomes one dimensional, it's really hard to run the ball. But Isaiah did a great job. I think we have two really solid running backs, if not more. And you know, we just you need to find a way to make some plays on in the back half with the receivers. And I, you know, you saw Kyrick's getting flexed in to running back a little bit to just get more people touches. But it's something that we've talked about before. It's like you just got to find ways to get easy touches to these guys. And I don't think really getting Kyrick as a running back's the right. I mean, it could be, but at the same time, just throw more bubble screens, just get them jet sweeps or something like that. So hopefully they can get it going, but I do think the offensive line for, you don't really see it, right? It's not going to jump off the page at you that they're playing so great when you're not running the ball for 200 yards, but I think they're doing a really good job.
Pat Fitzgerald said this week, Rashawn Slater, he was asked who might be an all Big Ten caliber on this team. He said Rashawn Slater might be. Remember, he missed the Nebraska game. He was back the other night. And look, anybody you're matched up on that defensive line for Ohio State, you're going to have a tough matchup. And whether it's Jonathan Cooper or Chase Young, those guys are playing at such a high level, and they got a bunch of first round picks across on their defensive front, right?
It's unbelievable.
So it's tough, but I do think Jared Thomas, I think, has been steady at center now for a couple of years, and you know these other guys, I think, are going to be okay. But I think you do have to like the way Slater's playing.
Absolutely, and I think he's probably an NFL guy just with his athleticism and the way he can hold up against talent. You know, if you can hold up against Ohio State, you can hold up against anybody probably in the NFL too. So yeah, I think he's been playing great. And like you said, Jarrett, we had him on the show a couple weeks ago. He's a great kid and just kind of the stalwart in there, and people follow him, and it's clear why.
What do you see from Aiden Smith, who got the start again?
Yeah, I think you know, he's still playing with a little bit more conviction than Hunter was, which is good. I just, you know, my biggest complaint is just, you know, they're not opening up the field, right? You know, at the end of the day, you got to stretch the field, you got to throw more bubble screens, stretch it horizontally and vertically, and I just don't think we're doing that, and it's unfortunate because clearly Coach McCall doesn't trust the quarterbacks, and the quarterbacks aren't giving him a ton of reasons to. But to have any sort of success, you have to take the training wheels off and open it up a little bit. And you think they do it at this point, and you think they do it against Ohio State, where the only way you're going to win is if you open it up. And in my opinion, they still really didn't. But we'll see. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season goes as this schedule doesn't get a, you know, it's not to say Iowa and Minnesota and whoever else they play aren't great teams, but it gets a little easier from here.
And we're pleased to be joined here on Collegiately Speaking by former Wildcat safety Brian Peters. And Brian, first of all, give everybody a little update. I know you played several years for the Houston Texans in the National Football League. What are you up to these days?
I'm still trying to play. I continue to train and just kind of navigating the free agency market and life limbo a little bit. I literally just pulled up into Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from originally, and I'm unpacking my stuff from Houston. So that's kind of my current state. But still trying to play. Spent the last 7 years in four different leagues and just trying to keep that dream alive.
Yeah, the dream dies hard, doesn't it? And it's something that I think when you go into it, you kind of know it's going to be that way, right? It's part of the deal?
Yeah, for sure. Not a lot of people get to leave football on their own terms by any means, but it's a fun pursuit. I mean, I have an incredible passion for the game, but just the lifestyle and the people and the community and the platform you get with playing professional football has been incredible. So I'm going to chase that till the wheels fall off.
Yeah, good for you, man. Thanks again for joining us. Let's swing into kind of Northwestern, and first one we'll talk about. Obviously, there hasn't been a ton of highlights except for the defense, and you know, obviously Coach Hank has been there for a long time, and a guy that you play under. Maybe talk a little bit about his scheme and how he finds ways to consistently have top defenses in the league in the country, because it seems like, you know, when they play Wisconsin, he obviously coached there and always has a great game plan for them. But kind of across the board, he seems to have a great bend but don't break defense and consistently holds teams, you know, under 20 points.
Hank is phenomenal. It's an interesting concept. I've been talking to some of my teammates across the NFL recently about it as far as scheme goes. Hank, you say bend don't break. Hank's kind of do what you do and you have to beat us with what we do. They're very fundamentally sound as far as gap accountability, and then like coverage wise, like we're not incredibly diverse. Like you'll see them play cover 4-6, and then he'll start to work in like a return 3 where you slant the front. And then, like, come third and medium, third and short, like, you're going to see man defense with a post safety to some extent. So that's not incredibly complex, and it doesn't need to be. Like, but overall schemes, like, you'll mix in a little game plan thing, but, like, if you have the sound coaching fundamentals that Hank has always lived and praised, everything looks good on paper, then if you execute your technique at your position – usually you'll be pretty sound against no matter what offense you're playing against.
Yeah, no, it's been apparent for a long time. He's done a great job adjusting over the years. Obviously, you didn't play on offense, but you clearly know the Northwestern offense has been struggling, you know, this year and probably in fact a couple years. You know, what makes, you know, I think when we were there, we had a pretty dynamic offense. What makes our offense hard to defend when it's clicking first, and then, you know, what makes it easy to defend when it's kind of stagnant? Because I guess my biggest complaint this year so far is it's just like a, you know, it's a sitting duck, not a ton of motion, not a ton of key breakers. It's kind of what you see, what you get, quick slants and whatnot. What makes our offense hard, you know, start there? What makes it hard to defend when it's clicking?
From my experience, mostly it was like me competing against you directly. So a lot of it relies on the quarterback decision maker, but it also the hardest thing, a lot of things haven't changed in McCall's offense from what I've seen as of lately. You still get the Chicago's, but the thing that changes my eyes, so that's like when we were able to control the ball a little bit more with Jeremy and Drake when we were there. That's something that I haven't seen as of late, where what was hard for us is we had Zeke Markhausen, or however you say his name, Jeremy Ebert, we had Drake, and you guys had a lot of option routes on the inside, and with those two guys working off each other, then you making great decisions, that was the hardest thing to defend. Jeremy was able to stretch the field, and then when we were probably working on all cylinders at our best, like, you get deep threat and just kind of stretch us out, and that's where you'd pick us apart. And then your decision making was always elite. I'm not going to keep talking good about you podcast, so that's the thing. Like, I don't see a lot of like guys winning on option routes. I see like kind of slants on the inside. Like, I haven't broken down Northwestern offense in a long time, but just watching as a fan now. I haven't seen that type of separation that those guys used to get, and I don't know, and I don't even know if it's being called, honestly. So that's what was always hard to go against you and those guys on the inside for us as a defense.
Yeah, it seems like that's kind of been a theme. If you even take it back, you know, when McCall first got there, it's been solid decision making from the quarterback, and then solid inside guys, right? Even last year, we had Flynn Nagel making a ton of plays and stepping up when you need it. We didn't have a ton of deep threats, but Clayton always seemed to find Flynn on big plays, and it just seems, you know, both across the board, the quarterback play hasn't been great, and then, you know, there hasn't really been an inside guy step up. I honestly think that a lot of the same stuff hasn't been called, and maybe that's just a trust aspect for the guys, and McCall not trusting the quarterback or trusting an inside guy. But at the end of the day, you got to give him a chance, right? And I feel like anytime you have an offense sitting there, not moving, not motioning, not showing key breakers. I think, you know, Fitz talked about it a little bit with Ohio State. They ran a drive concept into the boundary, and the safety jumped it because Hank does a great job coaching it up, and he broke it off into kind of like a drive and go, and it was an easy score. You know, Northwestern, for as predictable as they can be sometimes, you need to throw in those key breakers, right? That keeps the defense honest, especially the safety position. Talk about that a little bit, Brian. Just like when you see the same stuff, whether it's a bubble screen or inside zone or whatever it is, talk about a defender's mindset to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so a lot of concepts, like the college is similar to the NFL in that aspect, where it's a copycat league to some extent, where things execute in the Big Ten, you'll see them the next week with another team. But a lot of like what you see now with the zone, some people are working the RPO, or they'll run like the force, like you'll have trips with the back to the trips, and you'll get just that belly bubble option and that kind of thing. So as you break down the film and you see those things, obviously I try and, like, when I break down film, I try and steal two or three keys that will help me make a play in the game, and I don't try and carry out too much other than doing my job as a safety. But when I start seeing those formations and they lock and you don't see things deviate from those formations, like, again, that four strong region, like, that's something Ohio State does. That's something a lot of people do in the Big Ten right now. But if they don't deviate from that, similar to what maybe Northwestern's doing, I'm not positive. But it makes it much easier for the safety if the tendencies hold up for each formation or each down and distance tendency, whatever I end up taking into the game.
You know, Brian, you've described some schemes which I think to the average fan, they do sound pretty sophisticated, and I know that a lot of times simplicity is important in football, but as sophisticated as defenses and offenses have gotten in the college game, is it even like tenfold, that much more, when you get into the NFL?
It is. There's you have the ability, you have professionals now, you have people getting paid mass amounts of money to execute their job and play their technique. They're not just getting paid a rent check and a stipend, but it's funny how like a lot of things are still mirrored in the college game. I mean, the zone concept in the NFL still hold true, but that's something I know professional scouts actually are frustrated with. They call it, like, collegiate football, there's not a lot of gap schemes. Like, everybody's zone blocking, and it kind of takes away from what we do in the NFL. So the complexity of the run game is definitely higher in the NFL, and then obviously the pass concepts, everything is – a lot of things are schemed, and then it's tactical on matchups too, just because some teams have dominant receivers, other teams are kind of even across the board, and then it fluctuates. There's a lot of variables in the NFL where college, you kind of have that dynamic just on a smaller scale.
Visiting with former Northwestern safety and former Houston Texan Brian Peters, you know, we talk a lot about the linebackers that Northwestern has turned out going back to Fitz, and yet, really, you look at safeties, there's been a pretty good run of safeties coming out of Evanston with guys like Brad Phillips, Brendan Smith, Godwin Igwebuke, yourself, Kyle Caro, J.R. Pace now, and Travis Willock. I just wonder, is it something that's sort of linked into the system that Hank plays, that's kind of helping develop those guys, or has it become kind of a place where they've figured out how to develop that position?
I think in Hank's defense, it's if you're the guy kind of calling the plays in the back end, you have a little more control and awareness. Just with the coverages and with the formations, a lot of the Big Ten's running, you get an opportunity to be in an excessive playmaking position, but you're around the ball. Like if you're that backside safety, like a 2x2 formation, that kind of thing, you're going to be messing around in the box. Or if it's a 3x1 formation, like, and you're playing the backside, you're either going to be that half to see the quarterback. It's just there's benefits to being a safety in Hank's defense. It's if you're the play caller back there, you get a chance to make some plays. I think is the easiest way to say it without getting too complex.
All right, well, Brian, before we let you go, we appreciate your time. Give me your favorite Dan Persa moment.
Don't do that. That'll probably be at the Palace. It won't be on the field.
Okay, on the field. Football
you gotta
related.
Specify. Gotta specify.
PG rated. PG yes, rated. Right. My favorite Dan Persa moment.
Don't make me blush, dude. Just make it quick.
No, it's nothing crazy. I always enjoyed going against Dan in the summertime, like 7-on-7, where obviously like there's no coaches there, so it's us calling the defense, I was calling the defense for the linebackers in the secondary. He's obviously calling all the 7-on routes and on the other side. He kept running the same route, and I eventually made a play on it earlier in practice, and then he made up a play, like, drawn on somebody's stomach and double movement, and just walked by me. He goes, "Don't do that again." And that was one of my favorites.
I thought he was going to talk about the one in 7-on-7 where, again, no coaches are there. So there's a lot of expletives, a lot of stuff going on, extracurriculars, is like to say. He called, like, I remember we were in the indoor, we had something going, and he called, like, a blitz. And he came and, like, pushed me in the back while I was throwing. I'm like, okay, dude, like, let's chill out a little bit. Oh, man, that was a good time.
All right. Well, you get the fair shake here. You get to come up with one for Brian.
Mine had to be, like, I feel like every other game he had the club on his hand. So he'd break his hand, like, every 3 days. I'm like, dude, just amputate the thing and put a boxing glove on. But it's got to be the Outback Bowl pick with the tip to himself.
Oh, yeah.
With, you know, one hand. And, I mean, there were so many highlights in that game. But that was a pretty cool one. I think it was him and Drake had, like, two of the top 10 plays on SportsCenter with Drake's long bubble screen run and then Brian's one-handed catch on the sideline.
Any response, Brian?
Good times. I was trying to keep it relatively true. Obviously, Dan's a competitor. It's fun to be around people that have a lot of fire for the game and are excessively competitive. You can see that whether you're a fan watching the stands or you're directly competing against the person across the way. So I think that's what made our friendship and, like, just being a teammate with Dan incredible.
Hey, listen.
All right, boys.
We appreciate it. Best of luck. Hope to see you back in the NFL soon and keep it going.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Go Cats.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, great to visit with Brian Peters. So, Coach Pat Fitzgerald at his news conference on Monday was talking about how you kind of restart here. You're halfway through, six games down. I don't think anybody expected this team to be 1-5 halfway through and still winless in the Big Ten. So how do you kind of push the reset button? And he actually came up with, I think, a suggestion that would certainly appeal to the tech-savvy guys on this football team.
I use a little analogy. You know, when things aren't going great and it's, you know, obviously a technology world that we all live in, there's three magic buttons to getting things fixed, but they all have to be pressed at the same time, and that's Control, Alt, and Delete. You know what that does, Louis, to your computer? What does it do? It restarts it. That's what we talked about this morning, about restarting. So if you just hit one, like some of the coaches type like this, one at a time, it doesn't work. All three have to be hit at the same time, like kind of offense and defense and special teams. That's pretty creative. That might be the best T-shirt I've ever come up with. So hopefully we hit them all at the same time this week and we prepare. And then we mature and figure out that just because you prepare doesn't mean you're going to win. You have to go out and compete and make it happen on Saturdays, and we're just not getting that at a consistent level right now. So that's what we're hoping to do this week in our preparation, and then get ready to go play a great team on Saturday and compete.
A little bit different, Dan, than when I think you guys used to talk about, you have a bad game, and you just say, let's flush it, right?
Right, we've moved from the toilet to the computer, so we're getting with the times. But I think, I don't know, I'm not a computer science major, but I always thought Control-Alt-Delete was the troubleshoot. If I had this restart, I just turned the computer off and turn it back on.
Well, that's another way to do it.
That's probably not the best thing for the operating system. So he's a step ahead of me, I guess.
Yeah, you'll get the message that it was improperly shut down the last time. So you don't want that either.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
All right, you got Iowa coming in this week. You had success against the Iowa Hawkeyes, well documented. And the Wildcats have had success. In fact, Pat Fitzgerald's record against Iowa, 8-5. And, of course, last year they went out to Iowa City and beat the Hawkeyes in an unforgettable game that ended up clinching the Big Ten West for them. On the field at the end of that game, Fitz told his guys that they had just won the Big Ten West and they were going to Indianapolis. That was a great catch by Bennett Skoranek, who unfortunately has been out most of this season with an injury. Iowa watched them against Purdue on Saturday, and obviously another outstanding defense. But they're also a team which has some trouble scoring points. They're averaging in the low teens, I think, in scoring offense. And, you know, this is going to be one of those games where, again, we've thought this before and it doesn't always work out this way, where it could be kind of a low-scoring, grinded-out kind of game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of the games like we saw 2 years ago. Or was that 2 years ago when they went to overtime? And
yes.
And it was,
yes.
They won, what, 13-10? That was one of the slower games we've seen, you know, up there with Nebraska. And then last year it was still, you know, pretty low scoring.
It was 14-10 last
year. Yeah, it was right, kind of the same thing. So I don't expect a ton different. I think the streak Iowa had for a while was they hadn't scored a touchdown in against an FBS opponent for like five games or something like that. So, you know, Northwestern typically does a really good job against Iowa because, similar to Wisconsin, on offense, they run the same stuff, right? It's not a huge playbook of spread options. It's downhill running game, hard play action, you know, a couple tweaks here or there, but it's the same stuff, and Coach Hank really knows how to defeat that because it's just not that complicated. On defense, we've always done well against them because historically they've run the same stuff as well. I think the last couple years they've really switched it up because, you know, teams just got used to the same coverage and no blitzing, so the defense has played a lot better. But they're just stout, right? Their front sevens, you know, up there with everybody, and they have a couple playmakers in the back half that keep you honest. But they're a tough team. It's going to be another grinded out tough game.
They do have one of the more experienced quarterbacks in the Big Ten in Nate Stanley, but they're a team that they're not ranked very high as far as rushing offense. Kind of gets back to what you just said. They get most of their yards through the air, and you know, they're just kind of a solid team. They don't give up much defensively, so it kind of has that feel.
Yeah, it's going to be a special teams and turnover game, like we've talked about with all these low scoring teams. And it's been Northwestern's recipe for success for the past however many years, and haven't been able to execute on that this year. But that's what's going to define the game, right? Who's going to make that one mistake in special teams, or who's going to throw that one interception? I think Nate Stanley, he's kind of, in my opinion, regressed a little bit from his sophomore year. I thought he had a really good sophomore year, and then he's had, you know, some okay years here the last two. But he's a talented kid. He's a big kid, can make every throw, and if he gets hot and he gets confidence, that's a real problem. And I think this year, more than anything, they have some real playmakers on the outside, guys like, you know, Marvin McNutt, who can stretch the field. They have a few mm-hmm. guys like that can go up and make big plays. So I think, you know, they're going to take their shots, especially when Northwestern does a good job against their run game.
Well, it's homecoming. That always tends to be sort of a special day. And I think despite the Ohio State game, I think people are going to be fired up for this game. It's a rivalry. It's become a rivalry. Gary Barnett kind of put it out there as a rivalry in the mid-90s. And the I don't know if you call it a tradition or what, but it's continued. The Wildcats have won the last three meetings with the Hawkeyes. They haven't beaten them four straight since like the 1930s. So to do it on Saturday, I think, would be a pretty significant accomplishment. Then you hope maybe that's a turning point for you.
You need something, right? Mm-hmm. You know,
yep.
I think they're ranked, 20?
20.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, they're still a very solid team, and they get a big win to boost some confidence. And I think it's not going to take, you know, 30 points to beat these guys. It's going to be two touchdowns or three touchdowns, which is helpful when you have an offense that's struggling a little bit. So hopefully Northwestern takes some shots and has a couple of big plays, because that's something that, you know, they've really been lacking.
It was 17-10 in overtime last time they met at Ryan Field. And last year, as we mentioned, 14-10. So it's always
take the under.
It's usually a close game. Yes, that's good advice. So that's going to do it for Collegiately Speaking for this week. Thanks to Brian Peters for joining us. Thanks to our producer, Curtis Koch. For Dan Persa, I'm Dave Ennett. We'll talk to you again next week on Collegiately Speaking from WGNRadio.com.